Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Beating ominous clouds of volcanic ash spreading across Europe, Pope Benedict flew to Malta Saturday for a two-day pastoral visit. Our correspondent will tell us more about the trip, and we'll have an in-depth look at one of the oldest Catholic orders in the Church, the Knights of Malta, who built up much of the European island nation we see today. Pope Benedict's plane touched down at Lucca International Airport in Malta just before 5 p.m. local time Saturday, but it was touch and go for the papal plane, scheduled to take off at 3:30 local time in Rome from Fiumicino Airport, where authorities had canceled dozens of flights due to the widening arc of ash cloud from the eruption of an Icelandic volcano. Northern European nations from the UK to Ukraine had all but shut down their airports. Well, this is Pope Benedict's 14th apostolic journey abroad since his election 5 years ago. In fact, we'll be celebrating that anniversary this Monday. Well, we spoke with some of the people of Malta about their expectations for this visit. Let's listen.
I believe it is very important, not for Malta only, for the whole world, when the Pope goes to other countries. I mean, it's very hard. It's very nice because things will change. It will be a different story. You know, it's for example, we are gathered here, these persons, all right, just to pray for the what's going to happen, so everything will go smooth, you know, and everything will done. That's why we are here, not to see the preparations and that sort of thing.
Do you feel particularly close to this Pope and his emphasis on prayer and reflection?
Yes, I am.
How important is prayer in your life for you?
It's very important. The prayers is very, very important for me. I'm practical religion. Yeah. I'm not only talking. Uh-huh. I practical my religion.
I see that you're joined here in a prayer group.
That's right. That's
right outside the Cathedral of St. Publio. Can you just tell our listeners who St. Publio is?
St. Publio was the first bishop of Malta.
And he is the patron of Malta?
Of course, yes. He is the patron saint of Malta with St. Paul and St. Agatha.
How important is it to accompany Pope Benedict XVI's pastoral visit to Malta with prayer?
I think it is very important. It is very important. So that everything goes well.
Well, we also spoke to President George Abela ahead of the Pope's arrival. He said his country was honored to receive the Pope.
It's his first visit outside the Vatican in 2010, and I consider that we are a very lucky nation that his first visit abroad is precisely to Malta. And it comes at a very delicate and determining point, even in the Vatican history and in our history. So as a people, as a nation, we're really looking forward to this visit. After all, it is a pastoral visit, because we don't have to forget this, that the Pope is coming here on a pastoral visit to mark the 1950th anniversary of St. Paul's shipwreck in Malta. But it's a big occasion for us, welcoming the third Pope on our island.
Well, President Abela was just one of the many religious, political, and civil leaders on hand at Lucca Airport to welcome the Pope upon his arrival Saturday.
Yin content hafna linin sapfost kom. It gives me great joy to be here in Malta with you today. I come among you as a pilgrim to worship the Lord and to praise him for the wonders he has worked here. I came also as a successor of St. Peter to confirm you in faith and to join you in prayer to the one living and true God in the company of all the saints, including the great apostle of Malta, St. Paul. So my visit to your country is short. I pray that it will bear much fruit.
Well, of course, that was Pope Benedict, and those were his first words at Lucca Airport in Malta, and our very own Eimear McCarthy was there. She joins me now from Valletta. Hi, Eimear.
Hi, Tracy.
Well, Eimear, Malta is one of Europe's most Catholic nations. What kind of reception did the Pope get at that airport, and more broadly, how is this visit being viewed by the local Maltese?
Well, if you speak to the local Maltese themselves, as I have been doing since I arrived here earlier this week, they've been so excited in the run-up to this apostolic visit by Pope Benedict XVI. It's something that they have been preparing for a long time. And I have to admit that the organizational machine behind this visit is exceptional. Everything has been thought of. No detail has been left outside. If, for example, the fact that the Pope is here for only 24 hours, the authorities have really tried to pack to within that 24 hours as much exposure of the Pope to with the local Maltese as possible. Just to give you an example of this, as I speak to you right now, Pope Benedict XVI is inside the presidential palace, which is the palace of the Grand Masters of Malta. It's right in the heart of the capital, La Valletta. He is paying the traditional courtesy call to the president, which the Pope always makes after arriving in a foreign country. There's always the welcoming ceremony in the airport, and then he usually travels to the presidential palace to make a courtesy call. It's usually behind closed doors and a very private meeting. Well, right outside the presidential palace, there is the main square of the capital city. It's called the Republic Square. And it is full to overflowing with more than 5,000 children. These are children under the age of 14. They have been there since 5 o'clock this afternoon. And they have been singing since 5 o'clock this afternoon and are still singing. We can still hear them singing.
Well, let's talk a minute about what happened at the airport upon the Pope's arrival. We heard President Abela mention it in that sound clip earlier. There's a special reason why the Pope wanted to come to Malta this year, and he pointed it out in his discourse as well at the welcoming ceremony.
Yes, indeed. As we heard there, this is first and foremost a pastoral journey. It's a pastoral journey to the Church of Malta. It's a pastoral journey and visit with the faithful of Malta. Why? Because this year marks the 1950th anniversary of the shipwreck of St. Paul. St. Paul is known as the father of the Maltese. We heard in the interview that you heard there earlier with the Maltese people that I met in Floriana Square yesterday evening. He is the patron saint of the country because he was the first person to bring Christianity to Malta. And indeed, they are marking this event this year. Pope Benedict XVI said he wanted to be part of celebrations for this event. Malta is over 93% Catholic. It is a small island, but out of a population of 413,000, it's quite exceptional that an island within the Mediterranean, so close as it is to Northern Africa, so close as it is to the Near East, has remained down through the centuries 93% Catholic.
Both the President and Pope Benedict in their discourses brought up the problem of immigration, which is, of course, a very thorny issue for that island nation at the threshold of Europe and the forefront of illegal immigration.
Yes, indeed. It was one of the key points of Pope Benedict XVI's first speech and first address to the nation of Malta at Lucca Airport. He says that Malta has a lot to contribute to questions as diverse as tolerance, reciprocity, immigration and other issues which are critical to the face of the continent. He asked Malta to draw from their Christian heritage and build on it to become a bridge between peoples of different races, cultures and religions. And he encouraged them to put their faith into practice, into welcoming these people and always maintaining respect for the inviolable dignity and rights of each and every person.
And after that reception at the airport, we heard that Pope Benedict went on to the Grand Master's palace in Valletta for a courtesy visit with the president of the island nation. Then he was going to the St. Paul's Church and to pray at the grotto where St. Paul was believed to have shipwrecked on the island. What is on the agenda for Sunday?
On Sunday, of course, it is the focal point of Sunday is the Mass, which will be celebrated in the morning in Floriana Square. Floriana is at a very short, it's at literally a 5-minute walk from Valletta, but it considers itself to be a separate city to Valletta. Remember, Malta is only 320 square kilometres. Floriana Square was known as Granary Square up until quite recently, is the setting for the Mass. Pope Benedict XVI will celebrate Mass there with the faithful of Malta and the faithful of Gozo. Gozo is the island, the neighbouring island to Malta. It is part of the Republic of Malta, but it is indeed a separate island. The Bishop of Malta, of Gozo, Mario Grech, has organised literally caravans of buses to transport the faithful from Gozo to Malta to take part in the Mass tomorrow morning. And in the evening, it's probably one of the most spectacular appointments of this pastoral journey of Pope Benedict XVI. It's his meeting with the young people. He will travel to a very poor area, a very poor quarter of Malta, known as Calcara. And from there, he will board a catamaran, Tracy, to cross the great harbour of Valletta, and where he will disembark from the catamaran onto the waterfront and meet with over 10,000 young people from Malta and from Gozo. He will then be addressed by these young people, who will present their problems, their questions to the Pope Benedict XVI, and he will in return answer these questions. This is his last appointment with the people and the faithful of Malta, because directly from the waterfront he will make his way once again to Lucca International Airport and his return journey to Rome and the Vatican.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Emer. Vatican Radio's Emer McCarthy there, speaking to us from Valletta. It's one of the oldest orders in the Catholic Church. The Order of the Knights of Malta dates back more than 900 years, drawing on a past devoted to the care of pilgrims to the Holy Land. Today, it is a vibrant source of church aid to refugees, victims of disasters, the poor, and those in need of medical care. Emer McCarthy spoke to the Grand Master of the Knights of Malta, Fra Matthew Festing, about the order's history and ministry.
Well, we're here with Fra Matthew Festing, who has the title of the Grand Master of the Sovereign Military Hospital Order of St. John of Jerusalem, of Rhodes, and of Malta, more familiarly known to most of our listeners as the Order of Malta. It's a very long title, but for a very ancient religious order, one of the oldest in the Catholic Church. But can you tell our listeners what exactly all those words together mean?
Well, now, it's a great question, and you're quite right, it's far too long. But, of course, if you've been going for a very long time, in a way, you can sort of collect things together. If we'd all been in one place all the time, then I suppose that we wouldn't have such a complicated name. Equally, you can say somebody like the Benedictines, much older than we are, but they've stuck with one name. It's an accident of history. So sovereign, the sovereignty of the order was given to the order, and not on the basis of, as it were, owning a country, was given to the order by the Holy Father at the beginning of the 11th century. So that's where that dates from. And then by extension, of course, it was also because they were sovereign, as it were, over Rhodes and then Malta. So that's where that comes from. So that's the first one. Then there's the word military. And military, of course, is a complete mistranslation, because it's nothing to do with being a soldier. It's nothing to do with fighting. It's a translation of the Latin word for a knight. And so the answer is, it comes from miles. It comes from the, as it were, the idea that they were a knightly person. And it's become, it's a word that you can't really translate satisfactorily into English. And it's been translated as military, but it isn't really quite what it means. So where do we go after that? Hospitaller.
Hospitaller
is easy, because we have spent our time, 900 years of it, looking after the sick. Again, it's complicated, because the word hospitalier, as it were, for instance, in French, means something in French, and hospitaller doesn't mean a great deal in ordinary English. So again, it's rather a difficult word to translate into English. But it's pretty obvious what it means. It means that we are looking after the poor and the sick with a particular medical direction in how we do it. So that's how that works. Order then comes from the fact that it's an order of the church, like being any other order. Then we go from there to St. John. And the answer is that we are patronists of St. John the Baptist, although scholars will tell you that maybe at the very, very beginning, we might have been dedicated to St. John the Almoner, who was a rather obscure Middle Eastern saint, and much less well-known than St. John the Baptist. But certainly for the last 850 years, St. John the Baptist has been our patron. Then we go to Jerusalem, because that's where we were founded. That's where the thing, you know, it's where its origins are. Then, of course, when the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem ceased, we then went on a rather roundabout journey from Jerusalem to Acre, Acre to Cyprus, and Cyprus to Rhodes, so that's where the Rhodes bit comes in. And then after the fall of Rhodes, we went to Malta. And then, thank goodness, when we left Malta, they stopped adding more silly things on. Otherwise, we could be from Rome or anywhere else.
But the answer, or Russia.
Well, you know, it's very complicated. But they, that's why there is this extraordinarily long title. And, of course, it's also why the whole thing is, that's why we're still known as the Knights of St. John or the Knights of Malta, because it's much easier to say so.
You have, of course, a motto. The motto of your order is, do you want to say it?
How do you mean the motto? Do you mean that the two charisms of the order, Obsequium Pauperum and Tuitio Fidei, is that what you're saying? Right. Well, Obsequium Pauperum means that it's the, as it were, the care and the as it were, the looking after, if you like, of the poor and the sick. It's as it were, Pauperi is obviously is the poor, but it, by extension, it's also sick people as well. And then Tuitio Fidei is also very often mistranslated in English because lots of people describe it as the defence of the faith, and it's not what it means. To a degree, of course, it is the defence, but it really, tuitio is the same word as tuition, and that, of course, means of the business of nurturing, encouraging, like tuition, like a tutor with a pupil. A pupil goes to the chap to be taught and to have his knowledge increased. And so again, tuitio fidei means the encouragement, the nurturing, the teaching of the faith. So that's where that comes from.
Of course, we cannot leave out that it was a very important chapter in the history of the order and also a very important chapter in the history of the island. Would you like to take us through that period very briefly, if one can? It's very difficult to summarise.
Very, very brief, of course. What happened was that when the order was forced by the Turks to leave Rhodes, and that is a long story in itself, but when they were forced to leave Rhodes, they needed a home. They also had a powerful fleet, and at that stage, although they continued with their hospitaller works, they also were quite a considerable, particularly naval, but also military power. And therefore it suited the Emperor Charles V very well to give them somewhere to go in order to help him defend Western Christendom. And by chance, he gave us the island of Malta. I suppose he might have given us, for the sake of argument, the island of Corsica, say, I don't know, but what happened is that it ended up by being Malta. And that's where that long association from the first part of the 16th century to the very end of the 18th century came from. And so we were in Malta for that whole period of jolly nearly 300 years. I think it's something like 278 years or 280 years, roughly. It's that sort of period of time. So that's where the association of one and the other comes from. Then, of course, it was the longest period that the order actually ruled in a sovereign sense, ruled the territory. So again, it's very, very much part of the history of the island of Malta from that point of view. And then, of course, there were one or two other significant events which took place during that period. The most important one, I suppose, is the siege of Malta in 1565. And so it was really the first time that the advance of the Turks in a westerly direction was definitely halted and they were sent packing. And therefore it was hugely important both for the Maltese people and for the island and indeed for the whole of Western Europe. Otherwise we perhaps would all have remained, I don't know for how long, but certainly when you think about it, the Ottoman Empire continued right up until the First World War. If it hadn't been for the siege of Malta, perhaps we would all have been ruled by the Ottomans until comparatively recently. How does one know? But that's, from that point of view, it's a very important aspect of Maltese history. And, of course, the defence. Part of it was carried out, of course, by the Maltese people themselves, but the leadership was provided by the members of the order.
Was that, of course, the siege you're speaking about, was that the siege during which La Valletta, the famous master of the Order of Malta, general, he was one who really orchestrated the defences of Malta, and he's been honoured in Maltese history since. Most importantly, of course, the capital of Malta is named after him.
Of course. I mean, at the time of the siege, the harbour, what we now know as the Great Grand Harbour of Valletta, was in fact a natural harbour, which is why, of course, the Turks wanted it and why we were busily defending it. But at that particular time, the central peninsula in the harbour had nothing on it at all. It had a fort at one end, the fort of St. Elmo, which is where a lot of the siege was conducted from and a lot of the fighting took place. But in fact, the rest of the peninsula was simply bare ground. after the defeat of the Turks, the order then decided that it needed a capital, and because of the importance of the victory, of course, the whole of Europe was quite prepared to, as it were, to support the order and pay for the building of this huge city. And this, not only just the city itself, but the huge fortifications. And in fact, anybody who knows about fortifications will tell you that the thing that the order built in Valletta, that vast, vast complex of bastions, is really, it's the sort of 16th century equivalent of the atom bomb. If you have it, you're not going to get attacked, and therefore you don't ever have to defend it. If you have the atom bomb, nobody's going to attack you for fear that you might drop it on them. So in a way, it's a rather sort of similar idea, because in fact, until the Second World War, until the Germans and Italians tried to get Malta from the British, those fortifications were never, ever challenged, not once. So that's where, that's the importance in many respects of Valletta. And then, as you say, because the Grand Master was this huge sort of huge hero, obviously within the order and within the island, but indeed for the whole of Europe, that's why the city was named after him. And it's a very odd fact that even, for instance, even Protestant England rang every church bell it could find in the reign of Queen Elizabeth I, in as it were, celebration of the victory. Very odd for a distant Protestant country to do, but that's what did happen.
Now, that is probably one of the high points of the Order's period in Malta, one of the best-known, shall we say, events within the history of the Order's period in Malta. Something that perhaps is less commonly, people are less commonly aware of, is the work that was going on in the hospital that the Order had on Malta, avant-garde medical research, because this, of course, was the main mission also of the Order, was to care, where you took in people to the hospital regardless of their faith, I mean, immigrants and merchants, regardless of their faith, regardless of their culture, their creed. And, of course, you cared for them. This is also another very important aspect of the Order's work, an aspect that's still very important to the Order today, your involvement with immigrants, your work on the front line of immigration. Here we think, of course, again, of Malta and, of course, of southern Italy, where every summer during the calm period we see wave after wave of boats filled to capacity with people from North Africa, with people from countries that are either going through severe crises of poverty or war. And very few people realise that, once again, it's the Order of Malta who are on the front line, your doctors on the boats. Do you want to speak to us a little bit about that?
Yes, sure. The whole origin, of course, of that is it's nothing new, if you like. I mean, it's what we happen to be doing at the moment, but it's an extension of what we've always done. If you read the very first rule of the Order, which was drawn up by Raymond Dupuis at the very, very beginning, he was the second Grand Master, it doesn't mention a single word about having a navy or an army or bearing arms or carrying a sword. There's not a single word in it, but it says the object of the exercise is to look after the sick. That's what it says in the rule, and it's quite easy to read. It makes it perfectly clear what we should be doing, and that's what we have always done, even while we've been doing other bits and pieces. So both in Jerusalem and at Acre and in Cyprus and in Rhodes and on Malta itself, and indeed ever since, we've always cared for the sick. Now, we've done it in different sorts of ways. Sometimes we've had hospitals. Sometimes we've helped people who have been the victims of war, sometimes the victims of natural disasters, earthquakes, and so forth and so on. Nothing new in that either. And indeed, looking after refugees has been we have a long, long, long tradition of doing that. And so, unsurprisingly, as well as, for instance, being involved in the L'Aquila earthquake, for instance, quite recently in Italy, and in the present earthquake in Haiti, we're very much involved there. We're also very much involved in the business of trying to look after some of these refugees who arrive. And, of course, it's not. I wish it was just you mentioned North Africa, but, of course, it's a much bigger problem than that, because there are people arriving in the southern coasts of Europe from all over Africa, all over the Middle East, and even from the Far East. And, for instance, not very long ago, I did a visit to Lampedusa, and there seemed to be people from practically every part of the world except North and South America and Europe. So there are people from the whole of Africa, right across Asia, right as far away as China, who are coming into Europe. So what we're doing there is assisting the local, as it were, the Italian authorities, the Italian Coast Guard, and providing the medical cover for these people. And once these people, a lot of them, of course, have been adrift in small boats for days, by the time they're picked up, they're very often in a very bad state. And then, in addition to all that, of course, in due course, a lot of them come up into the middle part of Europe, so we're also busily caring for them in other places too, notably in Germany, notably in Belgium, to a degree also in France. And it's a big, big problem. It's a movement of peoples. It's a serious challenge for the whole of Europe. And for instance, you only have to see the various immigrants. Not all the immigrants that you see, for instance, here in Rome. They're by no means all from Africa. They're also not from Asia, but an awful lot of them are out of Eastern Europe. So again, we have schemes running in various places which are looking after these people too. So again, it's partly to do an extension of what we did for pilgrims going to Jerusalem all those centuries ago, partly an extension of that, and it's partly also the business of providing the medical cover for some of these people, because a lot of them arrive. Not very many elderly people arrive, but an awful lot of young people, and indeed people with children. So, for instance, some of our medical people on the boats with the Italian Coast Guard have even delivered babies on board. So it is extraordinary, the range of, as it were, medical expertise which is required to look after these people.
The Order of Malta is an international organisation. It has gone from being one that was concentrated in the Mediterranean areas, in Jerusalem, Rhodes, Cyprus, Malta, Italy, to being an international organisation. Can you just give our listeners some idea of the vast amount of countries that you are in?
Again, what you say is perfectly true. We have associations of the Order, if you like, branches of the Order, perhaps one should say, in 46 countries to begin with. We then have representations of one sort and another at ambassadorial level with 104 countries. And that allows us to have a basis from which to operate all over the world. And so at the present minute, we have a huge amount going on in very nearly every country of the world. Certainly every continent we have something going on. And obviously the thing varies from time to time and place to place. And one of the things we try to do is to basically do work which is really divided up, I suppose, into three parts. It's day-to-day work in developed countries, so somewhere like Italy or France or Germany or Britain or wherever it might be in Europe, North America and so on. We have a constant everyday presence which may be looking after drug addicts, it may be looking after old people, whatever it happens to be. Some of it is working in hospitals. Then in addition to that, we then have, in a lot of developing countries, Africa in particular perhaps, we then have schemes running where we're looking after people with leprosy, we're dealing with people with TB, which of course is now on the increase again, and general medical and social care in these developing countries.
And a warm thanks there to the Grand Master of the Knights of Malta, Fra Matthew Festing. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.